Good morning. Today is Wednesday, January the 15th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Supervisor in the 5th, Mr. Madrone. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, audience.
Are you having fun?
Oh, I'm having a lot of fun. New year, right?
Yay. I want to wrap up last year still.
Okay.
That's where I'm focusing. All right. Let's see if we can... Why did Yankee Doodle call himself Macaroni?
Oh, God, I have no idea.
You remember the
I do.
Children's rhyme.
Yeah,
okay.
Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yeah, put a feather in his hat and called him.
Okay. Yeah, that's a...
Because there was then the current name for a fop or a dandy. It was a name for a dandy because a group of well-traveled young Englishmen of wealth and position formed a club called the Macaroni Club in around 1760. They named the club that because they were fond of foreign cooking. These young men also dressed in a foreign manner. The common people misunderstood the use of the word macaroni and took their name of their club to be descriptive of their dress.
Well, there you go.
Called it Macaroni. There we go.
Children's
didn't
rhymes.
Say whether or not the Kraft family was represented there.
Yeah, probably not.
So, when do you guys start to get the budget? Or start to kind of begin to review and look at whether it's the mid-year adjustments or stuff coming from the state or indications coming from the state or any of that kind of stuff. When do the numbers start kind of coming together?
Yeah, you know, it's my second year at this, and I will have to say I don't know the specific dates, but sometime in the next month or so.
For the upcoming?
Correct, for 2021.
Now, how often will you review the existing? Is that a monthly thing? Is that a quarterly? Is that a semi-annual?
It's quarterly. And then adjustments happen. For instance, there were some increased revenues, and so I believe it was just a month or so ago. We had some information in front of us that there were some increased revenues, and where did we want to put it? So we make adjustments all throughout the year.
I had heard, I think it was Eureka, that sales tax was off a couple of points. How is the county doing?
It's off. I think it's off all over the county. Some places have been hit a lot harder. Garverville, sales taxes are way down, but it's down all over the county because there's less disposable income, primarily from the cannabis industry. So a lot of that money has been going into consultants and taxes and permits and other things. And
taxes.
Yeah.
Taxes,
Don't tread on me.
Yeah.
No taxation without representation, right? We're going to throw your tea in the harbor.
Yeah, John Paul's. No, okay, never mind.
Yeah. It's going down the
hole. Need to get a clipper ship out in Trinidad Bay before you can throw something off.
Something like that, yeah. I think, yeah. So, you know, it's complicated, but, you know, when you get a chance to have more revenues, that's a great thing. But in general, there's declining revenues from sales tax.
So where did this extra money come from?
The extra money was increased revenues coming in from a number of different sources. I couldn't tell you specifically sitting here.
It's kind of so it wasn't like grants all of a sudden or
no, not
the state having largesse?
Yeah, you know, I can't specifically remember. It was about a month or so ago, and there's so much that comes by us that... That detail escapes me.
Oh, I would have jumped up and down and clapped and made a big spectacle out of it.
Well, we did, you know, figure out some other places to put it, and, you know, that's always a good thing. But, you know, part of it is that the industry has collapsed from 8,000 farmers to, you know, maybe 800 that are being permitted or are in permits at this point. And many of them have had to get a lot larger. Some of them are, many of them are having outside investors come in to help them get to that larger place. And so when you do that, a lot more of the money leaves the community as compared to before, 8,000 small farmers spending, 90% of their income locally, 10% in Costa Rica, you know,
right,
whatever.
Right. So, yeah, the cost of business has gone up.
You mentioned
the government. Is there any way to track? Or does that go to the state or does that go to the
both
county?
Both places. So the state has several taxes they put on the cannabis industry. There is sales tax, there's excise tax, there's cultivation tax. So it's pretty complicated. And the layering of all those taxes is absolutely hampering the industry from growing. The county has its excise tax. Then in addition to that, there's all kinds of permit fees, et cetera. And, you know, you got fees with the water board, fees with DFW for water diversion.
Workers' comp. Basic stuff that really, I guess, I think most businesses would thrive if they didn't have to pay any government or payroll.
Yeah. No, these are big burdens.
You think about it, you know, so to have that in play. Now I would suspect we're really getting more of an accurate reflection of what the industry should represent in the county versus what it was historically.
Certainly, certainly. But, you know, if you're a small farmer and you can process everything yourself, you don't need worker comp. You don't need to adhere to ADA standards or other things because you have no employees. So when you get bigger.
And no tours either.
No tours, that's true, in order to do the tours, which people are trying to do, but they're running into barriers around ADA and all kinds of, you know, having bathroom facilities and on. So it's not as easy as we thought. Amsterdam figured it out, right? They do it in the red light district, you know.
Yeah, but they're not in California.
No, they're not in California, but they use all the California seeds that were created by the breeders, the breeders from Humboldt County and the Emerald Triangle. That's where that all came from.
Yeah.
And it's not even legal in Amsterdam, apparently. But city council, or whatever they have, the city fathers and mothers of Amsterdam said, well, we'll just go ahead and let it happen in the red light district where we can kind of control it, right? And it created this massive tourism boost. I mean, you can go, you know, I went to Amsterdam once and it was just so funny sitting there outside at the, they call them coffee shops, but everybody's actually buying
their little
cannabis at the teller counter and then going out. And there's a lot of these old people that come there with their kids, grandkids, and I had a bunch of them turn to me and said, sir, could you help us? And I said, what? And they said, well, we don't know how to roll up a cigarette thing with this. Could you help us do that?
And you look like you could?
Yeah, apparently. And the grandmothers are sitting there with their kids, you know. It was just quite an interesting thing how open it was and all that. And we're kind of
that would be so unsettling.
It can be.
Yeah.
You're not ready for it in Eureka, huh?
I'm not ready for it in my life.
I understand.
Yeah, I bet
different
you
different cultures.
Yeah, you got it.
It's all good.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Mr. Steve Madrone. See, the concept of trying to project out budgets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, certainly you get your department heads.
Yes.
They're going to give you a pretty good sense of what's going on.
That's right.
How much, I don't want to say credence because that's not the right word, how much full faith do you have in what they present? Do you do any little investigating on your own, just ask a couple of questions and say, you know, it's these guys' career that's on the line. If they try to pull a quickie on us and we find out, you know, they're X'd out, so that's going to keep them in line. What kind of overall philosophical approach do you have as you roll into something as serious as what the budget is?
Yeah, well, when the budget comes to us, over 90% of it is already allocated in terms of a draft budget that comes from the department heads, and we do have to put a lot of faith in them. And I have a lot of trust in our department heads and our staff here in the county and trying to do the best things. Now, I also get a lot of complaints from the community as a supervisor about people thinking it isn't being done that well, whether it's roads, mental health, or any number of other kinds of things that go on in the county. And so then I do ask those questions. I'll forward those complaints to the department heads. I'll meet with them, talk about them. And I do often ask questions about, could we approach this funding being used in different manners? You know, and please explain to me why we're doing it the way we're doing it. And what do you think about these ideas or concepts? So I do try to weigh into those kinds of things. I've got a steep learning curve for a lot of the various programs, but public works, parks, roads, trails, that's right down my alley. So last year, Supervisor Wilson and myself worked very hard with our colleagues to create a new position in public works. They got funded, and they've just hired some new individuals, and one of them is specifically a grant writer, project manager. And this person is going to be able to work with creating more partnerships, because as we know, our roads are really in bad shape. But we'll never be able to do it all on our own in the county. So if we can partner with nonprofit watershed groups, landowners, heavy equipment operators who might have quarries along these roads and other kinds of things, and we can bring together a partnership that this person can help coordinate and bring in more monies, we're going to be in better shape. For instance, down on Lighthouse Road in the Matol at Petrolia, where you go out to the beach there, really gnarly road, lots of problems with it.
Rough.
So as a nonprofit executive director last year, the Matol Salmon Group, I was able to secure $500,000 of grants to take a look at some very serious flooding and erosion problems happening on that road that we're partnering with the county, Fish and Wildlife, BLM, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and a couple of consulting firms to put together a plan to create long-term fixes to that problem once that plan's done. And this was a grant that provided us some money for a shovel-ready project in the sense that it's the planning and analysis and then permitting, and then we're ready for implementation. So that $500,000 will generate a couple more million that will come in and start solving those problems. And it doesn't have to come through the county. But the county is there as a player to make sure we're doing the right things by their roads and the rest of it. So that's a huge piece to the future for our county, is developing more partnerships and leveraging more resources beyond what we can do internally.
One of the questions I've had, and this goes back to when Terry Farmer was DA. Mm-hmm. So let's shoot backwards 15,
sure.
20 years, whatever it was.
Yeah.
He had a little hesitation about relying too much on grant,
mm-hmm.
not because of the ethereal nature of it,
right,
but because the lack of reliability.
That's right.
You know, okay, it might happen, it might not happen.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's a roll of the dice. I mean, I think everybody has. But what he had shared, the biggest concern at that time was, is everybody's starting to do that now.
Yeah.
So if you have success this year,
yeah.
Your project could be just as good, maybe even better, more critical next year.
Yeah.
But if there's five more guys
right.
at the table putting their proposals out,
that's right.
odds are you're not going, your effective level isn't going to be as high.
That's right.
And you can't take that to the bank year over year. And I thought, there's a lot of truth to that.
There is. And that's why you have to be really smart about what you're doing, because competition is always increasing. No matter what you look at, business, you're in a restaurant, competition. So that is an important issue. And what I've done in my 40-year career is I'm an expert grant writer. I get 8 out of 10 grants that I write, which is unusual. Often in government, people will send in 10 grants, kind of a shotgun approach, and they'll get 1 or 2 of them. Right. Well, we're wasting money on staffing for stuff that's not ready to happen. So I am going to work with some of our staff to try and help educate them how to be smarter about what you're going for. So you have a big laundry list.
Rifle shots instead of shotguns?
Yes. You have a big laundry list of all the things you'd like to accomplish, but only some of those things on that list are what we call ripe fruit or low-hanging fruit. And with 1 hour's of work, you can find out if your idea, your concept, is highly likely to be funded in the grant process. Rather than spending 2 weeks without doing that hour of research by calling the people that are going to make the decisions and stuff, and you can tease out what the success rate's probably going to be, and then you don't go after those things that just aren't ready, right?
So or if that project is one that's legit, that's serious,
right.
You go somewhere else.
That's right.
Instead of spending all the effort on that.
That's right.
Yeah.
You find another place to bring that. And so your menu never goes away. You always have these things on your list, but you figure out which ones are really where to put your time at. Now, the other thing I wanted to speak to is you talked about grants. Don't sit there and just rely on them. And you're right, because grants are a small piece of the pie. In fact, the public sector is the small piece of the financial pie. The big piece is the private sector, right? That's where all the money is. And so if we can create better incentives for the private sector to make their own investments in doing a lot of these things, because they can then write it off their taxes, much like the solar tax credit approach, we're in good shape.
It's 8:30.
Locally owned businesses help our community maintain a distinct personality and to help increase tourism, because we don't look like every other place. Small businesses also provide the ability to try on and try out items before you buy and get real expertise, saving you both time and money. When you shop, shop local.
Our award-winning camping department has the gear you need no matter what kind of camping you do. Come in and experience the many benefits of shopping with Pacific Outfitters.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Steve Madrone. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redec, Humboldt Termite Pest Control, along with Murphy's Markets. Steve, as you look at some of the different challenges that are out there, private side, public side, for some of these public-private partnerships, is there still a lot of ignorance about what could happen, what might not happen? You know, early on, it was like, yeah, okay, it makes sense. And the stories you heard coming back was that people were having their wrists tied because they made a commitment. They didn't know what it meant, you know, in full faith, and they, you know, they had their teeth handed to them.
Yeah. No, that's a real factor, you know, trying to figure out how to reward people for good behavior and not have unintended consequences in that whole process. And so that's why I mentioned the solar tax credit, because there's a reason all these panels are going on the roof. It's really simple. It's called the solar tax credit, right? Where
I thought affordability.
Well, affordability is a tax credit, right? So instead of paying $20,000 to put a system on your roof, you're paying $10,000. And you're paying it off in 10 years, and the system lasts 20. So now it starts making sense, not only because you're trying to be greener, but also it makes economic sense. You're saving money. You know, now it really starts happening, and the momentum picks up. We can do the same thing in the natural resources realm. If we want people to take care of roads, protect wildlife, fisheries, wetlands, and these things, let's incentivize that. You know, make it such that if people are spending money doing those things, they then get to write those expenses off their taxes, off their income, and suddenly we'll unleash this huge private sector investment. And the grant monies will still be there, but we're never going to solve our problems off of grant monies alone.
One of the things that I remember, and this, yes, this is a nostalgia show, Terry and this, same show, is when we were having the slides south of Lolita on the road, and FEMA would come in and restore it to previous condition.
That's right.
Not the best condition, not to avoid having to come back next year, but to the previous condition.
Right.
So as we're talking about grants and some of these different approaches and a different perspective, is the government looking at this stuff and saying, no, if we did this, we wouldn't have to be back here next year. And we can not only save money now, but down in the future. And okay, the situation is made better, and we're using tax dollars for that, but we're also saving the next 35 times we might have to come out here. Is there a change of perspective at the governmental level too, so that some of these things make sense and can make something better rather than just what is?
You know, I wish that once we figure that out, it would stay permanent, but it seems cyclical to where, you know, we get it right at a certain point with some programs and things, and then all of a sudden it's like we didn't learn a darn thing in the new programs that come along, and that's very frustrating. I tell all my friends, and I'll tell all your audience, you know, one of the best things people could do is just take a basic economics class, you know. And what you'll learn there is that there are sticks and carrots that people need to understand.
I thought it was widgets on islands.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah, I've got an island for you if you're looking for one. No, but, you know, we all know that there's two approaches to getting things done, and you need them both. You can't just have carrots. You can't just have sticks. You need to have the enforcement there if somebody's going to do something wrong to, you know, bring that stick in and deal with it. But if you haven't provided enough carrots and incentives up front to encourage the right behavior in the first place, there'll never be enough enforcement to deal with all the problems. And so we know that prevention, you know, saves an ounce of prevention saves a pound of trouble, blah, 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 whatever the term is. But it's so true. And so the more we all educate ourselves about the power of incentives, and as a society making choices to demand of our elected representatives that they be smarter about these things, look towards permanent solutions, the better off we're going to be.
Well, the electeds are one thing.
Yeah.
The bureaucracy staff is totally different.
I mean, that's
right. When they don't, when there's not a perception that the tax dollars are their money.
That's right.
That it's just something that kind of pennies from heaven, so to speak.
Right.
And there's no buy-in on it. There's buy-in on efficiency. There is nothing we can push towards.
Yeah. Well, you know, it takes time to change things. I spent a lot of time talking with staff people in agencies and trying to help them understand that the way they're approaching a particular problem is not actually accomplishing their goal. I can sit these agency people down and say, you and I share the same goal. We want to fix the roads, protect the salmon. We want to protect our water quality. And the way that we're going about it right now is not getting us there. So can we talk about another approach that might be a more cooperative approach, working with businesses to try and get to the place we both want to be?
Seems simple that way.
It does seem simple.
But that's really logical.
Oops, sorry.
And I think a lot of the folks are driven by emotion.
You bet.
Now, whether it's a religious fervor and others are no and right on a different plane, it would be nice if there was somebody that you could go to.
Yeah.
And say, you know, here's the reason why, without having to go involve lawyers and legals and consultants and all the money associated with that, just to say, what about?
Yeah.
And to have somebody who could really think about that.
Yeah.
Have you found, are there different ways around that?
Yeah.
To get to that point? And do most people do it?
I think we've got a long way to go to the point where people in agencies and citizens in general get the skills to be able to do those negotiations and make those things happen. That's why I think leadership is so important, to kind of direct us in that way. You know, if we're just allowed to our own demise, then that's what's going to happen. So,
I'm thinking like the FEMA folks.
Yeah.
Okay, and, now their boss, you know, who would we talk to?
Right.
Senators and Congress. Well, that's probably not going to get too much traction going.
Right.
Okay, so now we're dealing out in the street with this person or these people going, doesn't this make sense? Well, I'm you know, and that's the moment when the decision is made to do something.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you know, I think a lot of us just don't know what the options truly are.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the landsliding, you know, at Lolita and other places. And it is true that FEMA used to pay for those repairs, but they would just kind of bring it back to pre-existing condition, but not necessarily solve the underlying
get ready for the next
problem.
Slide.
They'd treat the symptoms, right?
Yeah.
But at a certain point, they were doing that over and over, especially in places like Humboldt County that has, you know, steep mountains, a lot of rainfall, earthquakes, you name
Blue goo, yeah.
Yeah, and lots of unstable soils. And so they have said, starting about 10 or 15 years ago, that they will not pay for treating landslides over and over again. And so when we look at that and we look at what we've done with our highways, for instance, right, in order to increase the speed and reduce the time it takes to get to San Francisco or to Redding, we've widened our highways out to try and get there. And I remember when I moved here in the 70s, it was a 6.5-7 hour drive to the Bay Area. Now it's about 5, right? So what did we trade off for that increased speed or reduced time to get there? We traded off reliability. You know, who would have figured that Highway 36 might become our main route in and out, because 101's closed, 299 was closed all winter just a couple of winters ago, you know, with the big slides out there by French Gulch and whatnot.
Right.
And now what are we doing on Highway 36? We're widening and undercutting a bunch of landslides and stuff. So, you know, we've got to be a little smarter about this. Sometimes it just really needs to take a little longer to get there as long as the highway stays open all the time, right?
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Are you a business owner looking for financial or technical assistance? An entrepreneur looking to start a new business? The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the Small Business Development Center want to help. With business loans, classes, and one-on-one consulting, our goal is your success. We've been helping Humboldt County businesses for over 30 years. Visit us at 520 E Street, Eureka, the Prosperity Center, or find us on the web. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Small Business Development Center. We're here for you.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:48. Talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, if people want to get involved, if they want to try to find out some of these things before it, and maybe it's not even their property, they just want to try to say, you know, guys, let's make things better.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make it easier. Let's make it simpler to make our area better. How do you kind of start? Or do you have to be specific to a site or specific to a project before you can really kind of get in and sink your teeth into something?
Well, I think specifics are really important, but ultimately there's an overarching principle, and it's, I'll credit John Kennedy. It's ask not what your county can do for you, but what can you do for your county? And I don't say that lightly. I really think that it's always been true, that if people think that They just need to call and complain, and somehow government's going to provide everything for them. It's not going to happen. People are going to be frustrated. We're not going to get there. We have so many problems. And when people do step up and start taking on some responsibility and offering assistance to try and pull people together to solve problems, we actually start getting somewhere. So I see that as a critical thing. So that's kind of overarching. And then within that, everybody has different interests. You know, there are people that are stepping up to try and help with the homeless issue. You know, there are people that are stepping up to help with the roads issues, you know, and other kinds of things. So that's where I see real progress happening, is when we as individual citizens take some responsibility to organize what we can within the realm of our, you know, our sphere, and drill in to these various problems in the various locations around the county.
If history repeats itself, there's a lot of commissions and committee positions that are looking for people.
Yes.
Do you need to be nominated? Does somebody have to buy you a cup of coffee so they can get, nominated by Steve Madrone?
Right. No, there are a lot of open positions. People can go to the county website and see what open positions there are there on the various boards and commissions and different things. And at that point, they should simply contact their particular district supervisor. And more often than not, the supervisor is going to be very happy to hear from them and appoint them, because there's empty seats out there. Some things are more competitive, like Measure Z committee or some of the other ones that actually deliver monies and do different things. But you have to get to a supervisor who's going to want to put you on there, right? So one way or another, one of the supervisors has to initiate that. And then there are district appointments and there are at-large appointments. So, you know, we're always looking for people to step up. In fact, we have an opening on the Planning Commission right now that Estelle Fennell is looking for somebody from District 2 to fill that position.
Not that that would be a controversial one at all.
Oh, no, it's a really easy one. You only have to come in every 2 weeks and do about 2 days of homework.
Thanks for coming by. See everybody tomorrow.